He, and he alone, can decide whether he will go back to college and start the course all over again in the hope of passing successfully next time. There is no mother or father or best friend to stand by and take the blame for anything that he has done wrongly. He is there alone, entirely alone, more alone than he has been since he stood in that place before, last time. And he judges himself. No devils, no Satan waiting with twitching tail and fiery breath, nobody is going to jab pitchforks into him, and as for all the flames, well, they don't even use such things for central heating. Most people emerge from the Hall of Memories considerably shaken and remarkably glad of the help and sympathy which their helpers, waiting outside, offer. There comes a period of adjustment, a period when the newcomer can think over all that he has seen, think over all the mistakes he has made, think over what he is going to do about it. It's not a matter to be decided in a few minutes, all manner of things have to be considered. Is it worth going back and starting all over again, or would it be better to stay a few hundred years in the astral waiting perhaps for more suitable conditions to come along? But then, thinks the newcomer, he doesn't know about all the suitable conditions or when they are likely to come along. So he is invited to go to helpers who will discuss everything with him, and who will advise him without putting any pressure whatever on him. At all times he has complete freedom of choice, freedom of decision, no one is going to force him to do anything. If he wants to go back and do a bit of hell raking on earth, that is his choice, and his choice only. Many newcomers are not aware that they can pick up all the sustenance, all the nourishment they need from the air, from the vibrations around them. They think of their earthly life, they think of all the choice foods they would have liked to have had but perhaps couldn't afford, so, if they want it they can have it. No matter what type of food, it is there for the asking. If they want fat cigars or thin cigarettes or stinking pipes, yes, they can have those as well. Clothes. You'll never see such a medley of clothes and costumes as you will on the astral plane. Anyone can wear any style of clothes he desires and it's not considered at all wrong, no one cares, it's the other person's affair. So if a fellow wants to get himself done up as a hippie with a load of pot on each hand, he can do so, the pot there won't hurt him, it only hurts when he's on the earth because astral pot is entirely harmless, earth pot is horribly dangerous. But the newcomer soon tires of doing nothing. He soon tires of just kicking his heels and watching the astral world go by. Even if he was a lazy slob on earth, one who just liked to hang around street corners and utter wolf whistles, well even that sort of fellow soon tires of doing nothing in the atmosphere of the astral plane. He asks for work, and he gets it. What sort of work? There are all manner of things to be done. It's impossible to say what sort of work he does just as it's impossible to say what sort of work a person would get here on Earth if they went to Timbuktu or Alsace-Lorraine suddenly. They do work within their capabilities, necessary work, and in doing the work they find considerable satisfaction and stability. But all the time they have the nagging thought, the nagging wonder of what to do. Should they stay in the astral a bit longer? What would other people do? They ask again and again, and they are told again and again, always the same thing they are told, and never is there any attempt to persuade them to do anything, the choice is entirely theirs. At last they decide they can't hang around any longer, they decide they cannot be a dropout from the school of Earth, they must go back, do their lessons properly and pass the examinations. They make their decision known and then they are taken to a special group of people who have vast experience and some very remarkable instruments. It is determined what the person has to learn, it is determined how best he may learn it. Go to a poor family, will that help? Or should he go to a rich family? Should he be a white man or a colored man, or should he be a woman, colored or white? It depends on the sort of mess he made of his last life, it depends on how hard he is prepared to work in the coming life, it depends on what he has to learn. Anyhow, the advisors are well qualified to help him, they can suggest, and they suggest only, the type of parents, the type of country, and the conditions. Then when he has agreed to the conditions certain instruments are brought into play and the necessary parents to be are located. Alternative parents are located as well, and these parents are observed for a short time. Then, if everything proves satisfactory, the person who is ready to reincarnate goes to a special home in the astral world. There he goes to bed, and when he wakes up he is in the process of being born into the earth. No wonder he makes such a commotion and lets out wails of despair. Many people, entities, decide they do not want to return to earth just yet, and so they stay in the astral worlds where they have much work to do. But before discussing them, let us deal with a special class of people who have no choice, suicides. If a person has willfully ended his or her life on earth before the allotted number of years, then that person has to return to earth as fast as possible in order to serve out the unexpired time, just as if they were a convict who had escaped and had been recaptured, and had had a bit tacked on as an extra punishment. A suicide gets into the astral world. He is met, received, just as if he were an ordinary legitimate person coming back, no recriminations, nothing of that type at all. He is treated precisely the same as other entrants. He is allowed a reasonable time in which to recover from the shock of leaving the physical body, probably violently, and entering the astral. When he has recovered sufficiently, he has to go to the Hall of Memories, and there he sees all that has ever happened to him. He sees the flaws which really made him commit suicide. And so he is left with the awful feeling, the awful knowledge would be a better term, that he has to get back to earth and live out the unexpired term. Possibly the suicide is a person of poor spiritual caliber, possibly he lacks the intestinal fortitude to go back on earth, and he thinks he is just jolly well going to stay in the astral and nobody can do anything about it. Well, he is wrong there, because it is a law that a suicide has to return to earth, and if he will not return of his own free will, then he is compelled to go. If he is willing to return, then, at a meeting with special counselors, he is advised of how many days or years there are remaining to him on his earth sentence. He has to live out all the time on earth. He also has to live out all the time that has elapsed since he committed suicide and before returning to earth again. So, perhaps it took a year to straighten him out and get him to decide that he had to go back to earth, thus he gets a year added to his life on earth. Conditions are found on earth so that he can return and encounter substantially the same type of conditions which caused him to take his life before, and then at the appointed time he is put to sleep and awakens to the act of being born. If he proves recalcitrant and just will make no move to go back to earth, then the counselors decide for him on conditions which would meet his case. If he will not go freely, then the conditions are a bit tougher than if he did go freely. Then, again at the appointed time, he is put to sleep without him having any choice whatever in the matter. He is put to sleep and when he wakes up he is back on earth. It is often the case that a baby who is born and dies perhaps a month or two after is the reincarnation of a person who committed suicide, rather than perhaps face 2 or 3 months of agony when they were dying from incurable, inoperable cancer. The sufferer may have taken his own life 2 or 3, or perhaps 6 months or a year before he would naturally have died. But he still has to come back and serve out all the time which he tried to short-circuit. It is sometimes thought that pain is useless thing, suffering is useless thing. It is sometimes thought that it is good to kill off a human who is incurable, but do these people who advocate such a course really know what the sufferer is trying to learn? His very suffering, the very nature of his illness may be something about which he desired to learn. People often write to me and say, "Oh, Dr. Rampa, with all your knowledge, how is it that you have to suffer so? Why don't you cure yourself and live forever?" But, of course, that's nonsense. Who wants to live forever? And people who write in with statements like that, how do they know what I am trying to do? They don't, and that's all there is to it. If a person is investigating a certain subject, then often that person has to undergo a considerable amount of hardship in order to do the work properly. These people who wander off and bring aid and sustenance to lepers, for instance, well, they don't know how the leper feels or how the leper thinks. They might be helping the leper's physical being, but they still are not lepers. It's the same with TB, or cancer, or even an ingrown toenail. until one actually has the complaint or the condition, then one quite definitely is not qualified to make any discussion on the complaint or condition. It always amuses me that Roman Catholic priests who are not married and who, presumably never have children, never become a father, that is, except in the spiritual sense, dare to advise women about having children and all that. Of course, many of these Catholic priests go away for vacations and they get to know quite a lot about women. We saw that in Montreal. It is definitely wrong, then, to commit suicide. You are just postponing the day when you can be free of earth legitimately. You've got to come back like an escaped convict who has been recaptured. And you are hurting no one but yourself, and it's yourself you think about, isn't it? That's one of the things that has to be overcome, too. The ordinary average person who is not too good and not too bad stays in the astral world for a varying period of time. It is not true that everyone stays there for 600, or 1,000, or 2,000 years. It depends entirely on the conditions which prevail in the case of each and every individual. Here is an average time, but then there is an average man in the street and an average woman in the street, and the average time is just, well, just a figure. There are many tasks to do in the astral world. Some people help those who are coming to join the astral world, some people act as guides to them. And this guide has nothing to do with spiritualist seances or old ladies who think they have a Red Indian guide or a Chinese Mandarin guide or a Tibetan Lama guide. What these old ladies usually have is an overdose of imagination. Actually, if everything was counted up and if everyone who claimed to have an Indian guide or a Tibetan guide was listed, there just wouldn't be enough Indians or enough Tibetans to go round. And in any case, these people on the other side have teacups so some old biddy can give a reading. It doesn't include speaking through a tin trumpet or moving a bit of cheesecloth. All that stuff, which of course is utterly useless, comes from a bit of nervous energy on the part of some usually hysterical operator. People on the other side have too much to do looking after their own affairs to come to earth and poke about in dark rooms breathing down the necks of people who are there for a delicious thrill. The only ones who do go to these seances from the other side are the nature spirits of a lower type called elementals. They are there just for some fun, to see what a lot of saps these humans are to believe anything and everything that is told to them. Don't you, my dear friends reader, go in for this guff. Because guff it is. The same goes for this Ouija board stuff. People will get Ouija board and play about with it, and some elemental who is always dashing about like a mischievous monkey, will see what is being done, and he will definitely influence the reading. Now you might think there is no harm in that, but there is no good in it either, and definitely there is great harm in these Ouija board readings if an elemental causes the message to be given to sound highly plausible but which is just something extracted from the victim's own subconscious. A person's whole life can be affected for the worse by believing in this Ouija board messages. Another great source of misinformation is when the Ouija board is moved in accordance with the collective thought of the people who are gathered around. Often it will be impelled by wishful thinking and, again, will give a message which can be positively harmful by being misleading. The safest thing is, have nothing whatever to do with Ouija boards and nothing whatever to do with seances. Remember, you came to this earth deliberately not knowing the exact purpose of your visit, and if you try to find out too much without very, very exceptional cause, then you are like the student going to the examination room who manages to steal a copy of the examination papers first. That is just plain cheating, and it doesn't help at all. One job which has to be done in the astral world is to receive those who come during the hours of sleep. People are arriving at all times because when it is daylight in one part of the world it is night in another part, so there are a constant stream of people going to the astral world during their sleep period, and they are like children returning from school. Just as children like to be greeted by their parents or friends, so do these night travelers. Their traffic has to be directed, they have to be put in touch with those whom they desire to meet, and many of them desire information and counseling during what, upon earth, is night. They want to know how they are doing and what they should do on the morrow. This does occupy a lot of time for a lot of people. then there are other entities in the astral world who are not reincarnating to Earth again, they are going on, going up to an even higher plane of existence. At the right time they will die very peacefully, very painlessly to the astral world. They will, in fact, just vanish to the astral world and will appear in a higher plane. There are more and more people coming to the Earth, more and more people being born to the Earth, and many inquirers wonder why that should be so. The answer is Earth is just one speck of dust amid billions of specks of dust, and when people ask me why the population of the Earth is increasing, I tell them the truth, which is that people are coming to Earth from other more nebulous planes of existence. Perhaps a person comes from a two-dimensional world and comes to Earth as his first experience in a three-dimensional world, so he starts his round of existence to the three-dimensional world which we call Earth. And all the time there are more and more people coming as Earth becomes more and more of a qualified school of hardship. That is the purpose of Earth, you know, to teach one hardship and how to endure it and how to overcome it. People do not come to Earth to have a very enjoyable time, they come to learn so that all the information they learn can be passed on to the Overself. After this world there is the astral plane, and from the astral plane, in the fullness of time, one is born upwards to different planes of existence until at last the fully evolved entity merges with the Overself. That is how the Overself grows. If, having grown quite a lot, the Overself decides that there is much more to learn, then fresh puppets are put down on some world and the whole process of cycles of life is started all over again, and each time when the puppets have completed their cycles they return purified to the Overself, which, again, grows through it. When a person is living in the astral, that is, when a person has died to Earth, then that particular entity enters into the full life of the astral world and is not just a visitor as are those who return to the astral world during the time when their body is asleep on the Earth, and, being full-time members of the astral world, they behave as ordinary people would on the Earth. That is, at the end of an astral day they sleep. The astral body which, of course, is quite solid to people in the astral world, goes to sleep, and, again, the psyche leaves the astral body at the end of its silver cord and goes into a yet higher plane. There it learns things which will be of use on what we might term the lower astral when the spirit returns to the astral body. Do not think that the astral world is the highest world. Do not think that it is heaven, it is not. There are many, many different cycles or planes of existence. While in that world which we call the astral world we can have a family. We live in much the same way as people live down here except that there are not quarrels because in the astral you just cannot meet people with whom you are incompatible. So that if you get married in the astral, then you cannot have a nagging partner. This is not generally understood by people on Earth. While in the astral world you cannot meet those who were your enemies on Earth, and your family, well, your astral family are as solid to you as were people on the Earth to you. Humans are not alone in the astral world, animals go there too. Never, never make the most tragic mistake of thinking that humans are the highest form of existence, they are not. Humans are just another form of existence. Humans think in one way, animals think in another way, but there are entities who, compared to humans, are as much above the humans as the humans are above the earthworms, and even these people know that they are not the ultimate form of evolution. So forget all about being a superior creature and concentrate on doing the best job you can. Animals go to the astral plane, animals go higher as they merit it just as humans do. One of the big difficulties with the Christian religion is that they think humanity is the highest form of evolution possible, they think that all creatures were made for the satisfaction of man, and that has led to some terrible conditions. The animal world and the animal manas have been incredibly tolerant knowing that humans have been misinstructed by their religious leaders, by their priests who really rearranged Christianity to give themselves adequate power. Accept it as fact, then, that in the astral world you will not find cowering dogs or scared cats. You will instead find a partner who is in every way the equal of a human and who can communicate with a human with utter ease by telepathy. Many people have asked about bodies. Will a body appear to be just a bunch of gas, or what? And the answer is, no, a body will appear as solid to you in the astral as is that lump of meat which you now push about on two bony stems, and if two people should collide in the astral, well, they get a bump just the same as when two people collide on the earth plane. There is great love in the astral world, physical love as well as spiritual love, but, of course, on a scale which the mind limited to earth thoughts cannot comprehend while in the earth body. There is no such thing as frustration in the astral world because love is completely satisfactory at all times and for both partners. Some people have written and asking for a description of God. God is not just the head of a big corporation, you know. He's not just an old fellow who wears a long beard and carries a lantern on the end of a staff. God is a great force which can be comprehended and understood when one is out of the earth body and in the astral world. At present upon the earth one is in a three-dimensional world and most people could not understand, let us say, the description of a nine-dimensional object. Each world has a Manu in charge of the world. You can say that the Manu is like one of the gods on Olympus, so thoroughly described in Greek legends. Or if you wanted to be more up to date, you can say that the Manu is like the general manager of the branch of a big firm. Under the general manager of that branch, because this world is only a branch, after all, we have departmental managers who, in our terms, would be called the mainers of different continents and of different countries. These under managers are responsible for running, let us say, the USA or Germany or Argentina, and so on. And just as human managers have different temperaments, so do the mainers, and so the country concerned gets a different national characteristic. The Germans, for example, are quite different from the Italians, and the Italians are quite different from the Chinese. That is because the manager of that department happens to be different. The mainers, no matter how glorious they seem to be, are just puppets of the great entity or over-self which makes up God. That great over-self uses mainers as puppets in much the same way as the human over-self may use a whole bunch of humans in order to gain experience. Another question which is so frequently asked is, the astral body apparently has some sort of substance to it. If it has molecules, no matter how thinly dispersed, these could be subject to destruction or injury through heat, cold, or collision. If this were so, some discomfort and pain in almost a physical sense could exist. How would the astral fare in the vicinity of a physical star? Well, when one talks of molecules, one is talking of substances which are in the earth plane. A molecule is a physical thing, a piece of matter, but when we are talking about the astral plane, we are completely away from the low-grade vibration which comprises everything upon this earth. A physical body on the earth can receive injury from another physical body, but a physical body in the astral cannot in any way be damaged by the physical body of the earth. The two things are completely and utterly different. One can say, just purely as an example and not a very good example at that, one can say that a rock and a light do not interact upon each other. If we throw a rock up into the sky, it doesn't hurt the sun. So in the same way, anything that happens on the earth does not hurt any astral body, but what does hurt people in the astral is the crass stupidity displayed by humans on the earth in trying to bump each other off, liquidate each other in various painful ways, and generally behave like a lot of completely insane people instead of entities who are upon earth to learn something. The way people of earth as going on at the present time is much the same as the way the students who wreck million-dollar computers are going on. It's time humans grew up, and it's time students learned that they go to a school or college to learn from people who know more than they do. Chapter 9, Remember, the turtle progresses only when he sticks out his neck. Glory be. I thought I had put behind me all discussion of astrals, deaths, and all that sort of thing. And now here's another load of questions all bearing on the same thing. For example, does an atom explosion which incinerates thousands of human bodies simultaneously cause pandemonium on the astral plane, or how does it affect or disturb them? It does not do a thing to harm them physically, but it certainly causes an awful flap because thousands of people are going to come to the astral world in one awful huddle. Many of them will be scared sick, many will be insane with shock, so all available helpers are rushed to help those who are pouring in and are in a very distressed state. The scene, actually, would be very much like that when there is a truly bad calamity on Earth, such as an earthquake or something at least as disastrous, where helpers and volunteer helpers rush to use any means possible to lend assistance. The answer then is nobody in the astral world is harmed by the detonation of the bomb, but they are very much upset by the extra work in trying to care for so many people all at one time because, while such an event will have been foreseen, yet all these foreseeings are probabilities and not necessarily actual events which are just bound to occur. The next one asks, how do the mayors of nations supervise the affairs of their nation? Do they work through the United Nations representatives, through the heads of nations their cabinets and advisors, or how? If the United Nations was as had been hoped, that would have been the way for a Manu to work, but here is something that you have to consider very seriously. It may be distasteful to you, it may even be thoroughly shocking to you, but nevertheless it is actual fact. This particular world is not a very advanced world, actually it is a penitentiary world, a hell, a hard school, call it what you will, and many of the mainers in charge of this world are themselves learning. As they gain experience and as they become successful, then, just like a departmental manager, they get promoted. And if the general manager can make a success of things in his small branch, then he might well be promoted to a much larger branch. It really is necessary to look at things with an open mind and to remember that when on the other side in the astral one does not sit on a cloud and strum a banjo or pluck the strings of a harp, one has to work. If you are in the kindergarten class at school, you might think that the great big grown-ups of 12 years of age in a class hire a real gods who do nothing except tell the teachers where to go, and these 12 and 14-year-olds might think that the sixth formers or 13th graders, or whatever you want to call them, are truly gods of creation. But these gods of creation still have to do homework, still have to attend classes, still have to gain experience. All right. People come to this earth to gain experience, mainers look after this world, more or less, in order to gain experience, and if there are few fights between countries, well, it's teaching humans and it's teaching mainers as well. In higher states, that is, with much more advanced worlds, mainers can get together and discuss things amicably so that there are no wars and no particular crime, but that is much too advanced for the hoodlums of the earth. The Earth people are here to learn the hard way because they won't learn in the soft way, the kind way. If a chap comes along and takes a swipe at you with a club or shows an earnest desire to bonk you on the noggin and lay you out, well, it's useless to say, I pray, my dear fellow, that you will kindly desist from these unwelcome attentions. Instead, if you are wise, you will kick him where it will do most harm, and then let out a hoot for the police. So the mainers of this world are learners. They are learning things just as you are, and when they have learned to straighten up things a bit, they will move on to something better. But, cheer up, you have to stay only about 70 years or so to a lifetime. The poor mainers have a longer sentence than that by far. Now here is a little question tucked in. It is understood that the line of the 13th Dalai Lama was all the same soul. Could the 13th be now in the land of the golden light and still reincarnate in the 14th? Well, that is the easiest question of all to answer because the 14th Dalai Lama himself seems to have spilled the beans to the press and admitted that he is not a reincarnation of the Great 13th, which is just as well because the Great 13th is a very active entity indeed in the astral world doing very much good, and, I believe, rather sad that the present leaders in exile in India are not doing much to aid suffering Tibet. But I dealt with that at some length in an earlier chapter of this book, so perhaps I should not gild the lily or repeat myself when I need not. Another person writes in referring to my visit to Venus, but let me state here and now that I definitely, definitely, definitely do not recommend that book. It is just a few pages containing some articles which I wrote years ago, and it contains some, well, I consider them offbeat, illustrations not done by me. This book containing parts of my work and filled out with a lot of blurb was published entirely without my permission and entirely against my wishes. The same applies to a record, The Power of Prayer. I definitely do not recommend it. The quality is exceedingly poor and it was never meant to be reproduced as a record.